This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
There are two trends that we've covered at length for the last 3 years. One being the uptick in mental health issues, anxiety, depression, and everything that comes with an uptick in anxiety and depression going up, like drug use, substance abuse, and so forth. And the other trend, and by the way, we usually tend to attribute a lot of that to, at least I have, and I think this is generally the consensus when we open it up to callers, is we generally tend to attribute a lot of that to the rise of social media, the decline of in-person social interaction, the rise of smartphones at younger and younger ages and everything that comes with that, like cyberbullying and a loss of human connection. And honestly, I think that's pretty reasonable. And that's largely the thesis of Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation, which is number one on the New York Times hardcover nonfiction bestseller list. And I think it's the number two seller among all books at Amazon. We've done segments on it. It's been written about extensively. He's gone on a lot of different radio shows. The other trend that we've explored over the course of the last 3 years is the decline in organized religion. And that's very real. And right now, we have people that attend some sort of organized religious service on a regular basis in this country at an all-time low. Well, what if those two issues were linked? The decline in mental health, the current mental health crisis that the country is experiencing, which everyone has attributed to mobile phones and more, and the decline in religion. That is precisely the thesis that is making its way through some very well-respected circles in academia. A professor of epidemiology at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health, Tyler Vanderweel, writes in Harvard Public Health that extrapolations from the nurses' health study data suggest that about 40% of the increasing suicide rate in the U.S. from 1999 to 2014 might be attributed to declines in attendance at religious services during this period. Now, we'll give you some other facts, but I just want you to let that sink in. The 40% increase in suicide in this country from 1999 to 2014 might be attributed to declines in attendance at religious services during this period. Another study suggested that declining attendance from 1991 to 2019 accounted for 28% of the increase in depression among adolescents. The piece also says that a major 2022 systematic review in the Journal of the American Medical Association documented 215 studies, each with sample sizes over 1,000 participants, using longitudinal data. These are real studies. This is not done by the Vatican or United Hebrew International or anything along those lines. These are real independent studies. And these sample sizes, these studies with sample sizes of over 1,000 people using longitudinal data to evaluate the relationship between religion and health, and the evidence, including from Harvard's own nurses' health study and handbooks, providing more extensive documentation, suggests that weekly religious service attendance is associated with lower mortality risk, lower depression, less suicide, better cardiovascular disease survival, better health behaviors, greater marital stability, greater happiness, and greater purpose in life. Now, I find this, on the one hand, really remarkable, and on the other hand, not at all surprising, because I have said when we've done these stories, well, I didn't have any data to back me up, but when we've done these stories about the decline in church attendance, I've said that even if you don't believe in God, I think going to church is an incredibly positive thing in one's life. One, because you interact with a lot of interesting people. You also end up meeting and networking with a lot of good people. You also learn a great deal. I can't speak to Muslim services because I've not been to any, but all of the English languages services of any faith that I've ever been to, even the ones that are mostly English language services, I have learned an enormous amount. You learn about history. You learn about literature. You learn about geography. You learn about all sorts of things. Also, in the overwhelming majority of cases, the message that you're hearing, even if you don't believe in any sort of deity, the message that you're hearing is a positive one and an uplifting one. And if you're participating in regular church services, and when I say church, I mean this in the non-denominational sense. It could be synagogue, could be whatever. But when you're participating in organized religious services, by the way, happy Passover to everybody that's celebrating. You are part of a community and you have a sense of belonging. And when you're not, I think that's more likely to lend itself towards feelings of isolation, towards feelings of anxiety, depression, and everything else. Now, the fella that did this report, Mr. Vanderweel, Tyler Vanderweel, he's probably best known for being nearly canceled at Harvard after students, administrators, and faculty got wind of a Supreme Court brief he wrote defending the traditional definition of marriage. And this latest article he wrote when it, you know, people started talking about it when it was highlighted in an email from Harvard's Central Administration published Gazette. And that suggests either that someone now running Harvard wanted to send a clear message of support that Mr. Vanderweel has not been canceled, or that whomever is editing the Gazette was unaware of the cancellation situation. Either way, you know, either thing is plausible. Anyway, plenty of mental health clinicians are seeing in religious service attendance some of the habits and attitudes that can help to combat depression and anxiety, face-to-face interaction, a supportive community, a sense of purpose to get out of bed and out of the house, expressions of gratitude, expressions of humility. Now, Professor Vanderweel, like any good scientist, is careful to note the difference between causation and correlation. And he's, you know, he's pretty cautious in the way he uses language. He uses words like suggest, rather than the more definitive language such as demonstrate or prove. None of this is to say that anyone should avoid seeking mental health treatment and instead just go to church as a substitute for that, because that's certainly a danger too. But I really do think this is incredibly encouraging. And if you're suffering from any of these feelings, I think you should try, and if you haven't been to church in a while, and especially, try going to church, because I think this is really interesting. So then there's another article in the Wall Street Journal just a week ago that shows the mental health benefits linked to going to church. And that cites a different study from Baylor, from another academic institution that I'm less familiar with. and it cites a couple other pieces of supporting evidence. But I will tell you, I absolutely buy this. I believe this. And that's why, in all seriousness, even if, you know, I do believe in God, but there are a lot of aspects of theology that are a total mystery to me. But sometimes it's supposed to be a mystery. That's why they call it the mystery of faith. Even if I didn't believe in God, I would want to take my son to church for all the reasons stated. And I think that for all of the finger pointing that's been done to the smartphone, I think maybe this has been a factor that has largely been ignored. Ira Stahl wrote an interesting piece on this on the website The Editors. You can read his column on this as well. So I'd be curious to know your thoughts. Do you think there's a correlation between the decline in church attendance and the uptick in mental health problems the country is facing? In my view, the answer is a resounding yes. Let me know what you think. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. In a little bit, we are going to read the emails that you have sent in to the program. If you would like your letter read on the air, if you have a question you want me to try and address, I'll do my best to do so. You can email me at frank.morano, that's M-O-R-A-N-O, at redappleaudionetworks.com. It's plural. Frank.morano at redappleaudionetworks.com. And I'm on Facebook as well. And we're going to do a really interesting Facebook Live video tomorrow. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. But I'd love your thoughts on this. Let me know what you think about this. And we'll also read through your email correspondence in just a bit. Also, we have some snail mail here if you want to send in some snail mail. By the way, there is a mailing address. If you want to send us a little mail, just send it to The Other Side of Midnight, Attention Frank Morano, P.O. Box 1777, Attention Frank Morano, New York, New York, 10163. So that's Other Side of Midnight, P.O. Box 1777, Attention Frank Morano, New York, New York, 10163. You know, my neighbor, John Charles, he needed a stamp. And my wife and I were going for a walk with our son yesterday, and we were delivering a letter. And he texted my wife, I guess, saying, "Do you have a postage stamp?" And she said, "Absolutely," because we have all sorts of postage stamps. So I stocked up. And we're walking back to the house, and we see him outside. And I say, "Hey, I hear you need a stamp," and I take one out, and I give it to him. He says, "You carry postage stamps in your wallet?" I said, "Absolutely. Best investment I could have ever made. You never know when you're going to need to mail a letter or something else. You better believe I carry postage stamps with me." Although I didn't think. I have a stack of Ruth Bader Ginsburg stamps in my house. And John Charles was a very conservative individual. And I would have enjoyed the look on his face when I gave him a Ruth Bader Ginsburg stamp. And he had to use that one. Instead, the one I had in my wallet was, I think it was just an American flag. All right, 800-848-9222. We'll take your calls straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Tornadoes, Telstar, one of the great instrumentals of all time. This is a birthday bumper music selection from our buddy Chuck Darrow. Chuck Darrow has been a guest on this program many times. He's one of the leading journalists covering the casino industry in the whole country. And he's also a real broadcast pioneer in Philadelphia. And he's been just great. He's covered things going on in the Atlantic City casino scene since literally day one. And whenever he's been on this program, he's always been on the money. All right. Is there a link between the decline in church attendance and the decline in mental health? In my view, the answer is yes, 100%, absolutely. What do you think? 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Esther, listening on WCBM in Baltimore. Hi, Esther.
Wow, that was quick. Hello there, Frank. I got you really quick.
Well, I could put you back on hold if that was too quick for you, Esther.
No. I am so glad you brought up this topic. I most definitely agree with you. I love going to organized religion synagogue services. In fact, now that the weather's warmer, I'm going to start going at least twice a month. I enjoy the prayers. I like the singing. I went to Hebrew school. I went to Baltimore Hebrew College. I've been a former Hebrew school teacher. So I always leave with a great frame of mind. And you're right. I enjoy meeting the people, the camaraderie, the sisterhood, the brotherhood, whether I go to Orthodox, Reform, or Conservative synagogues in Baltimore, which you can do all the time. The place in Synagogue Row up Park Heights Avenue, there's a synagogue of every denomination, you know, Orthodox, Reform, Conservative. So I enjoy it. And it's a coincidence you brought this up tonight on the first night of Passover. You're a wise man. You're actually right. The mental health, your mental health is, I'm a little tired.
Yeah, it's okay. Believe me, I know. So am I. It's late.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Esther. I'm first of all, happy Passover. Second, you know, I wish I could, you know, lay claim to being this brilliant sage. I just really read the newspaper and highlight some of the articles that I find interesting. And I thought this study was particularly interesting. Esther, thank you. By the way, you know, one of the things that a lot of my Jewish friends have complained about in New York is the amount of money that you have to pay for tickets on some of the high holy days to go to synagogue. Is that an issue in Baltimore as well?
Well, no, I'm actually an ex-Army reservist. Now, when I had immediate family living, we did always buy tickets at Beth Jacob for synagogue services. But if you're a single person or you're an ex-Army reservist, they'll make allowances, or you have financial reasons, you can come in. They don't say don't come to services. But you have good common sense, and your topics are always very interesting, informative, and entertaining.
Well, that's very nice of you, Esther. Thank you. Happy Pesach.
Same to you, Mike.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. Do you buy this? Do you think, as this Harvard professor suggests, there's a link between the decline in church attendance and the decline in mental health? 800-848-9222. Alan is in Orange. Hi, Alan.
Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
So I think that the decline in attendance to religious services is not a cause in and of itself, but more like a symptom of what's wrong with the rest of society. I think starting a lot with the destruction of the nuclear family and also like people's work schedules, you know, that everybody, you know, family members have to work multiple jobs to make ends meet in the, you know, today's economy, and that it's an outcropping of stuff like that, where people just say, "Ah, I don't have time to go to religious services," or you know, "I think it's hokey to go." But that it's like an indicator of greater problems.
Well, that's interesting.
Do you agree with that?
I think I might, right? Because, and that's one of the things that I pointed out in this study is Professor Vanderweel is not making any correlation between going to church and not suffering from mental illness. He's basically pointing out that these numbers mirror one another, and that the people that don't go to church also suffer from mental health issues. He's not saying one is causing the other, but what you're suggesting could very well be on the money. Maybe someone gets depressed, they're suffering from extreme anxiety, and because of that, they're both suffering from anxiety and they're not going to church. It could definitely be the case.
I think there's a greater threat going on with just life in general in this country, where we're going, you know, what we're doing.
So what would you do? What do you think the solution is? Clearly, I think everybody acknowledges that we've got a problem. What do you think the solution to the problem is?
I hate to be like a downer, but I think it might not be solvable at this point because of the way that everything is entrenched in modern society here in this country. Everything is very fast. It's forced upon us that we have to work. Everything's expensive, so that encourages people to have to work. You know, but maybe both parents and the kids are at home, or that maybe a grandparent is watching the kids nowadays. The cell phone thing and stuff on TV and in movies. You could almost say it could be part of a liberal agenda.
Mm. Yeah. Well,
you know, like in the more conservative days, like when I grew up, you know, there was less going on. It wasn't as crazy. Things were slower. We had time to gather as a family at the end of the day and have the dinner meal together.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, Alan. And I'm not necessarily making it liberal or conservative, but some of the things that you point out are exactly some of the reasons that Jonathan Haidt, in his new book, is saying that the smartphone is partly responsible for the decline in all this stuff. Alan, thank you. Look, they could both be true, right? You could have smartphones leading people to be depressed, and you could have a situation where people that are depressed are less likely to go to church. I still think that the things that you get out of church attendance uplift you mentally, spiritually, psychologically, emotionally. And I absolutely believe that there's a correlation. How much of a correlation, I have no idea. But I don't think all these studies are made up. And I think this really is worth exploring. And if you're someone that's suffering from depression, what do you have to lose? Why wouldn't you go to church a couple of weeks? See if it helps you, right? I have heard, I follow all these wrestling documentaries. I watch more documentaries about old school wrestling than I watch current wrestling, right? Most of my knowledge of anything that's going on in pro wrestling these days is only related to people that were wrestling 20 or 25 years ago, like Edge, Chris Jericho, and The Rock, or are the relatives of people that were wrestling decades ago, like Cody Rhodes or, all sorts of other people that are descendants of old school wrestlers. And one of the things that I get kind of down about is that so many of these pro wrestlers end up in tragic places. They end up getting involved with drugs. They end up, in many cases, not all of them. Some people like Mick Foley are total Boy Scouts, at least when not in the wrestling ring. They end up getting involved in alcohol. They end up getting involved with partying too much, cheating on their wives. And unfortunately, a lot of them end up dying young. But so many of the wrestlers that don't, that either turn their life around or never went down a wayward path, are people that have suddenly found God. Now, some people are cynical about that. Jim Cornette, whose podcast I listen to, who is very hostile towards organized religion, he thinks it's just a function of substituting one drug for another. I don't. I think there is so much positive that, and look, and I'm far from a holy roller, but I think if you care about humans, forgetting about the afterlife or anything like that, I think it behooves us to encourage church attendance. I really do. Not as a government, not as a society. I certainly buy that there's a strong separation between religion, between church and state. But on a one-to-one basis, I think it's really helpful. And a lot of these wrestlers, people like Lex Luger, Ted DiBiase, Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, the folks that have happy endings to their life stories, in many cases, are folks that have developed an interest in some sort of organized religion. Two of my most interesting guests on The Racket Report, which is a podcast that I host, which I really think is quite good, have been Michael Franzese and a gentleman that I think was really a phenomenal interview, who I got great feedback to, Louis Ferranti. Both of them found religion. In the case of Michael Franzese, it was Christianity. In the case of Louis Ferranti, it was Judaism. And both of those men are now doing great. They're best-selling authors and would not even jaywalk. And I think a lot of that is because one of the things that they were seeking to fill the void in their life, and they tried to fill it with money or alcohol or hanging around with unsavory characters, they now fill it with church attendance. And I think that's a positive. I really do. 800-848-9222. Maybe I'm all wet, and we'll move on if you do. Bill is in Minnesota, listening from WCCO in Minneapolis. Hi, Bill.
Hey there. Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I quit going until recently was the constant repetition of praise and worship and faith and belief, particularly in the hymns and in a lot of the epistles. It's almost as if, do we think that God or Christ has such low self-esteem that he has to be constantly told how great he is all the time?
You know, that's very funny. I think maybe you just need to have a new church, because I would agree with you. That's kind of boring. If you're repeating the same rote memorization each and every week, that can be a little bit of a downer. The church that we go to, the priest always has something kind of new for the homily. But even if there is a lot of memorization and a lot of telling God how great he is all the time, which is a very clever way to put it, I still think you get a lot out of just interacting with people that are there and being involved in things like the church soccer team and the different charitable events and the church bake sale. I think it's all a positive community event. It's not to say that you can't get that from some other thing, a bowling league, a Rotary Club, a Kiwanis Club. But on the whole, I think it has a positive influence on people's lives. Would you agree with that, Bill, or no?
Yeah, I would. But the big problem, isn't it? Younger people, but let's say people under 40, those aren't the ones that are attending?
Well, yeah, but older folks have also seen a decline.
Right. But I think you have to have activities. For instance, I go to church and sometimes there'll be a greeter there and say, how are you? Have you been here before? And say yes. But that's pretty much the end of it. You have to have something that lasts at least, let's say, an hour. So you would have a volleyball night, for instance, or you would, in the summertime, you would get people going canoeing, something like that that would involve them into an activity where you interact with somebody on, let's say, half hour or an hour at a time. And especially if you had it on Sunday when they're already there, they don't have to make that extra trip.
Bill, I agree. And I think there are a lot of churches that actually do that. But I agree with you. I think that's all positive. Bill, thank you. 800-848-9222. One of the things that they do at our church, which is nice, is they kind of do for, I don't know, 20 minutes or so. They do, not every week, but I'd say maybe every third week, at least once a month, they do something called Children's Chapel, where they'll bring all the children downstairs and they'll have some children's activities. And it's fun. It's fun. My son certainly enjoys it. Hey, speaking of my son, I picked him up from school on Friday, and I was reminded when I picked him up from school that he's off from school this week, even though he's in preschool and even though we're paying, you know, a fair amount of money to send him to preschool. And it's been good for him. It's been great. There's been real improvements in his vocabulary and his interaction with other children and other people. I think I'm a big advocate of getting children involved in associating with other children at a young age. He's 2 years old. They largely follow the public school calendar. So when I went to pick him up on Friday, the teacher reminded me that he's off from school this week. This week is his spring break. So rather than go down to Miami or going partying with all of his two-year-old buddies at the playground, he's off from school, and that means we have to largely find childcare for him. So we arrange a babysitter several days this week, and my father and stepmother were able to watch him one day this week as well. And there's 2 days where we don't have any childcare for him. And that's going to be quite a disruption to both Rachel's schedule and my schedule. So, but that's fine. Comes with the territory. So that's 5 days this week. 2 days we have babysitter. 1 day, my dad and stepmom. And the other 2 days, Rachel and I will figure something out. So Rachel and I are going over this at dinner yesterday. And she says, so that means Thursday, Friday, and Monday and Tuesday of next week, we have no childcare for him. I said, what? What do you mean, Monday and Tuesday of next week? Isn't spring break just this week? She says, no. It's 7 days. Five days off the weekend, and then another 2 days off. So all in all, that is Saturday, Sunday, 5 straight days off, and then another Saturday and Sunday, and then another Monday and Tuesday off. What sense does that make? I mean, he's going to forget what school's like. That's 11 days in a row off. It's crazy. Crazy for the amount of money we're spending in tuition. Now, we'll make do. We'll figure something out, but it's really inconvenient to a lot of parents. I don't understand why they do that. 11 days in a row off? It's, I don't like that. And I don't think Carmine likes it. He enjoys going to school and playing with his friends and doing that kind of thing. Except when he's off for a while. When he's off for a while, like when he was sick or, you know, something else, he gets out of the habit of wanting to go to school, and he gets frustrated then when we try to bring him back. So that's what we're dealing with now. All right, 800-848-9222. Roger's in Massachusetts. Hi, Roger.
Hi, thanks. Well, my thought was that perhaps the difference with church or synagogue, perhaps, is because of the subject matter supposedly is supposed to be about our Creator, and maybe the reason or his word or his direction for us, and maybe therefore it is sort of like the way we are wired, and maybe people deep down inside can gravitate toward it because, oh yeah, this sounds right, like when you use the word positive. I know you've cited before that you felt the reason for lack of attendance at church was non-compelling sermons or something. And I kind of agree. But I do think that the sermon is usually, even when I was young, the sermon was usually a part I would like to actually sit and listen to, because it was, you know, I found it to be kind of interesting and uplifting. And again, because I think because of subject matter, I mean, I believe that we are not an accident. I believe we are the result of intelligent design. And it's like we're going to the manufacturer for a tune-up, so to speak,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. I think that's a really refreshing attitude. But aside from the religious I don't know, the salvation that you get from attending church, right, and the religious, I'll call it the spiritual nourishment that you're getting from church. I'm saying that even if you don't believe any of it, there's still some value in going. Do you agree with me that even aside from the spiritual aspect of it, aside from the religious aspect of it, I should say, that going to church could potentially lead to a tremendous uptick in your mental and psychological well-being?
Well, maybe if the people are up, if the people themselves that are there are uplifting, because, I mean, there are clubs around, but maybe the clubs are, you know, let's say it's a hunting and a sportsman's club. Well, it might not be a very uplifting environment, maybe. You know what I mean? So maybe, because you can say, well, why don't you go to a club? Or why don't you go, you know, just, you know, listen to some public service announcement that said to make you feel good, eat your vegetables or whatever. But I don't know. I think that, the you know, being around, and maybe what the people involved with, we actually had something recently in our church where everyone got together and made some arrangement where people were packing meals like an assembly line for a certain outreach program.
I think that's
great. It was kind of a big deal. And all these people came out of the woodwork and we're all like a little armed, like a production line, kind of an army. And it was a positive thing.
I think that's great. Thank you. I want to try and get in one or two more calls on this. By the way, if you're interested in reading this, I just linked to the study itself and to a column that its author, Tyler Vanderweel, wrote, a paper, I should say. And it's really interesting. And there's a lot more to it than what I just broke down, although I think this is the, you know, the gist of it. You can go to my Facebook page. I just posted it up there, facebook.com/MoranoFan. The headline is Why Public Health Should Attend to the Spiritual Side of Life. And basically, he says, Tyler Vanderweel, Harvard professor, research suggests weekly service attendance is associated with better health. Who doesn't want better health? Better cardiovascular health, happier marriage. Who doesn't want that? It's all good stuff. Don is in St. Louis listening on KMOX, where we are now heard every day. Hello, Don.
Hey, this is my first time calling, but I would just like to say what the religious part of it does for me. It gives me a balance. What I mean by a balance, sure, I go to church and I listen to the different sermons. I've been to churches and have religious services around the world. I can say that, and God's blessed me with that. But I myself try to get an hour of reading scripture in myself, so I'm not putting it on the church to be responsible for my spiritual upbringing of what's inside of me. It also gives me examples of my everyday life, because I'm going to have some people that I love, some people that I can't stand. But what is the breakdown for me? I still have to pray for those people and not call them a bunch of SOBs or whatever else and realize that, okay, you're going to make some mistakes, they're going to make some mistakes. You know, they got a God that they're going to have to answer to, too. You know, you don't want anybody to go the wrong way. But we get down here and we want to run things our way. With the drugs, we want to do it our way. With the women, we want to do it our way. You know, with money, we want to do it our way. And what has this shown us time and time again? It does not fulfill us. So therefore, to slow down and not get on board the train going nowhere fast, I have a tendency to want to spend an hour in the Bible, an hour of quiet time myself, and I go to church. And like I said, I've gone to churches all around the world. So I've been in some services I was really excited about, some I wasn't excited about. But I myself have to open that book up and read it for myself. So that way I keep a balance with that. And when I blew it, I asked him for forgiveness also. Sometimes, you know, I was married to somebody. I still pray for that person I was married to. So it's not like, you know, good scum, I don't want to. No, I can't do that to you. I realized myself that I've made mistakes. I asked in my prayers that you forgive me, and I forgive you, and it gives me a balance in my life. So that way I'm not really feeling depressed about anything, because I have someone I can go to. And some of these people, after looking their face, and ask them for forgiveness. And that gives me a clean slate. I think there's too many people in this world don't have that clean slate. They can look for it in beer. They can look for it in women. And it's not going to fulfill them. But so when they run that race, what do they do in the end? They get back to the religious part of it. Because why? That seemed to be what they ran from all the time. And they weren't taking a daily dose of it or weekly dose of it. And it's not dependent on the minister to bring it to you. If you're hungry, you'll go out there and look for a meal. If you want to settle in the Bible, you'll open it for yourself and take some time out for you, your family, and other people. And therefore, when you get to church, you're part of what's going on.
Don, I appreciate you calling. I hope you'll make it a regular habit. I agree with just about everything you said, and I couldn't have said it any better than you just did. And I appreciate you sharing your personal experiences with the audience, Don. Call again.
God bless. Thank you.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Mr. Jones by the Counting Crows. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Yours truly, Frank Morano, here 9 minutes to the top of the hour. Why don't we go through some of your written correspondence, shall we?
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We enter letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Comes to us from the world of Facebook. This is from Rob and Debbie. Frank, why don't you bring back the $1,000 minute game? We always enjoyed it, and it was fun having a little trivia game show in the last hour of your show. Even if we were busy and missed the beginning of your program, we would always try to grab that section of your show to hear the game. We always enjoyed hearing it. You know, Rob and Debbie, I enjoyed doing it. I am a frustrated game show host. But management felt like it had run its course and wanted to go in a different direction, and unless they want to provide the prize money, we can't do it. So unless they buy into it, we can't. So if you don't like the change, feel free to write to management and suggest that we bring it back. I'd be happy to bring it back. This is from the world of Facebook. John writes, happened to be listening to your show on KMOX in St. Louis last night. You seem like a grounded guy. Not an extremist on either side. I respect that. Plenty to criticize on both sides of the political spectrum. I think Republicans and Democrats have lost touch with regular working class folks. Thank you. Well, thank you, John, for writing that. That's awfully nice. You know, we've really been embraced by the KMOX listenership much more than I could have ever dreamed of. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be on there. Eric writes, this is yesterday after yesterday's show. Good morning, Frank. Another day, another week. Great show. Very kind. Boy, we better find some criticism here. Neil Pollack, who you might remember, who was a really interesting guest. He's a film reviewer that said he would become addicted to marijuana and was a Jeopardy champion. And he writes me, hi, Frank. Just wanted to let you know I was driving back late from a winning poker session at the Borgata in Atlantic City Saturday night and stayed awake by listening to your show. Turns out Ken Kirsten, who I was staying with, has also been your guest. I edit his Book and Film Globe website. You should have me back on sometime. Hope all is well. Well, I'm not on Saturday night, so I don't know what show he was listening to, but it wasn't mine. But I'm glad he stayed awake while driving. Denise writes, grateful for your show and you. Dear Frank, I am truly grateful for your great show. Yes, we do have very opposite world and political views. You know, let me pause there. Everyone always says that. Who cares? You know, when I make a decision about who to listen to, I don't even consider, am I likely to agree with them or not? I listen to Michael Smirkanish. I listen to Bill Maher. I listen to Glenn Greenwald. And while all three of those people are interesting people and I think kind of independent thinkers, they all three of them are very different in their opinions about the fundamental issues of the day. So I don't know where this idea came from that you need to agree with people in order to enjoy listening to the show. I just never understood that at all. I used to listen to Alan Colmes and Rush Limbaugh, right? Just because they were entertaining and interesting. We do have many opposite world and political views, but you have so many amazing segments. I listened in bed and nearly fell off my bed laughing so hard at both your telling of the octopus's surprise 50 eggs and the hilarious recorded scream. I'm laughing now remembering that. By the way, Curtis has some nerve calling you a Mama Luke, whatever the hell that is. He's a Granny Luke and is literally unlistenable. Endless stories of his past, childhood, embryonic stage. Huge scream here. Keep up the amazing work and do rest. Chill. Linda writes on the subject of AI porn. Hi, Frank. I believe that especially with high school students, many who are 18 and 19 years old, adults, AI will lead to an additional way to harass and bully those who have been tormented throughout their school years. You'll probably recall the horrific case when a young college male was unknowingly videotaped while in the presumed privacy of his room while having sex. He wound up killing himself after his roommate made the video public. Even though AI is not factual, I believe it would be devastating, especially to younger people who are not equipped to deal with such situations, even if they're 100% fictional. I believe it should not be considered a form of free speech if it is presented as actually being the person or persons portrayed. I believe that AI left without limitations could lead to devastating consequences. A lot of people agree with you, Linda. A lot of people agree with you. By the way, Noemi, who listens from France, she commented on my ping pong game. Basically, she had some comments. I put up a video of me being beaten in ping pong by Andrew Giuliani, who's a very tough ping pong player. So Noemi writes, good game and racket. When you return the ball, try not to hold your racket straight, but lean forward with the top of the racket. This way you can even better control its direction and where you want to send it. And you will also be able to send it back with more speed and control, thanks to that. But yeah, my brother Alex has been trying to teach me that. I just can't get the grip of it. I can't get the grasp of it. I have to work on that. Robert Rossi writes, weighing my voting options for president, you mentioned an issue you had with Trump was his various personnel choices. Do you recall any evidence that for many of those positions, more qualified candidates rejected his invitation? We all agree change in Washington is needed, but it seems anyone aligning with Trump seem to have issues in their future endeavors. Could be an issue for many. Well, yeah, Bob, but there were also instances where he considered people that would have been much better and then didn't pick them. I mean, the example that most immediately comes to mind is Commissioner Ray Kelly. He could have picked Ray Kelly to be the director of the FBI, and instead he chose Christopher Wray. Now, Ray Kelly would have been a perfect choice to head the FBI, and yet he chose Christopher Wray. He could have chose Colonel Douglas McGregor to be Secretary of Defense. Instead, he chose Mark Esper, who's not even supporting him for president. So I think there are a lot of instances there. Do we have time for one more? No, I don't. We will do it on the next time we go through your written correspondence. Another letter from our listener, Dave. In the meantime, in the words of the late, great Barry Farber, now and always, keep asking questions.